pale horse. The man who sat on him was death.
And hell followed with him.
You're killing me, man.
Welcome to Declarations of War. We are your hosts, Alexeyev Card, Andy Astronaut.
Hey, how's it going?
It's Albosa.
Howdy, howdy.
This is a very special dev edition of the show. Our special guests for this evening are brand director for EVE Online, CCP Goodfellow.
Thank you for having me.
And EVE senior community manager, CCP Dopamine.
Pleasure to be here.
Now, before we get in and start talking to our guests, there are three important things that have happened since the last show that I want to acknowledge at the top of the show. First of all, congratulations to President-elect of the United States, Joe Biden, and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris. Listening to the Biden victory speech last night struck a very hopeful presidential tone, and I know I wasn't alone on EVE Twitter on that front. And on a more somber note, Declarations of War notes and mourns the passing of two entertainment icons in movies and television. Sir Sean Connery, of James Bond fame, and many, many other iconic roles, and the lifetime host of Jeopardy, Alex Trebek, who just today actually lost his battle with pancreatic cancer. So I,
hold on.
Yeah, it's sort of a bittersweet note that we begin the show. But even though these are dark times, one must move on. NAR Academy is recruiting, NAR is recruiting, and we have with us two extremely important guests. First of all, CCP Goodfellow, welcome, sir. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much.
So, please, for the benefit of our audience, give us a bit of background. How did your career progress? When did you make the jump to CCP? And what exactly does your role there entail?
So, I've been working at CCP for almost 4 years now. I'm an economist by trade, and actually before that, well, I've always played video games pretty heavily and competitively. I was a sales manager and a brand manager for the biggest fisheries company in Iceland. So I took a pretty much a U-turn 4 years ago when I joined CCP Games.
That is quite the U-turn. What even inspired you to do that? How did you go from fishing industry to online gaming?
So, like I said, I've been a hardcore gamer since I was 3 years old, playing Wolfenstein and other games at my parents' place, and then just out of total random coincidence, I saw an advertisement, and it sounded like something I'd like to do as a profession. So I applied and put pretty hardcore effort into all the process, and ended up at CCP.
That's awesome.
So what does the brand director, for EVE Online do? What is within the scope of your role?
Yeah, it's I'm fortunate. It's really varied. Depends on weeks or even days. I work a lot with the development teams on the upcoming features, what is going out and when, and how do we message it. And then I work with the publishing team, like CCP Dopamine, on the timing of news items and emails and campaigns and everything, how to message things and when, etc. Then I also work on various different other projects, such as Quadrants for EVE. That was something I built up with, of course, other great people at CCP. The CRM, Customer Relationship Management for EVE, the recruitment program, the different territory marketing, for example, launching in Korea and now soon in Japan. I took care of the world tour last year, which was absolutely crazy. So a lot of different really great projects.
Well, the world tour seemed to have gone over quite well. The Korean launch was tremendously successful from what I've been seeing.
Yeah, the world tour was absolutely awesome. Fantastic year. We visited 9 cities in 9 countries in 9 months, so it was absolutely bonkers in terms of pace. And I had my first son in the middle of it all to top it off. But it was a fantastic year. And then, like you said, Korea was absolutely fantastic, and we look forward to doing more of these launches in new territories in the future.
His first son. He's got ambitious plans. Well, congratulations, sir.
Thank you.
Now, in all that travel and real life developments, do you find time to play the game yourself?
I do. I play mostly all of the new player stuff over and over again to get a fresh eye on how that part is developing to career agents as well. But then what I prefer to do in all of the time I have to do activities is actually just to silently watch streamers play the game to get their perspective on the game and what their community writes and chats about Eve. Both is something I enjoy, and it also gives me a good insight into the game.
Sounds like your activities are rather, you fly solo most of the time, so I take it you haven't been recognized yet while you're flying around doing your thing?
Yeah, and I'd be surprised if I ever will.
Really?
It's not a plan I have to do that. I like to be in the shadows.
Well, I think your comment about streaming is potentially a nice jumping off point between you and your counterpart, Mr. Dopamine, but the rise of Eve streaming has definitely been a big part of the Eve story in the past few years. From a branding perspective, how do you see that? Is that something that you're driving and supporting, or did you just see it as a nice organic thing that's happening? And then for Dopamine, as we transition, I'd love to hear what we're doing on the community management front to develop those streamers and support them.
Yeah, I think, the streaming community for Eve is absolutely fantastic. And what much more the community team has done rather than on the branding point is working with them and creating a framework to support that. There's some things to talk about there also, but I'll leave it to Dopamine. One thing about streaming is that we've tried, for example, to do more generic streamers trying Eve to try to increase people coming into the game, but it's just clear that generic streamers, for lack of a better word, is not the best way to explain to new people how to play the game. And whilst Eve has extremely intense and awesome moments, also if you're a new player and not having somebody explain you the game or what's going on, it feels kind of off-putting because you don't really know what's happening and why. So for streaming specifically, it's the best thing to do for us is to double down on the community streamers and build and support them.
Absolutely, and I could not agree more. I think since I joined CCP, one of my philosophies that I was trying to drive is exactly making sure that we can help grow and develop our content creators. So then instead of us trying to always beat our brands, we actually give support to different streamers or video creators so they can be growing and getting their reach and building those mini communities or micro communities rather, for the following of themselves. And obviously, I think Eve Online is very unique in a sense of streaming, as it's not so immediately easily accessible for everybody who just stumbled upon it in Twitch. So it requires a certain level of the person delivering the content to be the driving force that attracts people to watch it. What we have been doing specifically is actually for the past couple of months, we've been working quite hard behind the scenes on resurrecting our old program that was specifically targeted for fan sites. What we did, we wanted to make sure we can cover as many different platforms and mediums of our community contributors. So the new partner program that we're working on is going to try to encapsulate as many different type of, I think, roles, you could say it, within the community that we can try to support, be that from streamers, video content creators, podcasters as yourself, bloggers, third-party app developers, and so on.
Wonderful.
If I may add also just what I find so fascinating about the Eve streamers is the community they have together, always highlighting each other out, doing content together. Streamfleet, of course, with the World Tour, I had the honor to work with them on the whole World Tour and the streaming aspect of it. So it's really inspiring to see how great of a group we have to work with for the streaming of Eve.
That's a great transition point for Dopamine. We already kind of brought you in on this topic. Would love to hear how you got to CCP. What was your path?
Right. So I joined CCP a little over 2 years ago. I first came to Iceland to help CCP on Project Nova, but with the changes to the game itself, I quickly transitioned to, at that point, help CCP Falcon and CCP Guard with all the different community things. I've been in the industry, gaming industry, for the last 10 years. Before I joined CCP, I worked at Blizzard Entertainment for 8 years, starting with the customer support and then doing community management there for the last 4 years for their Heroes of the Storm, Diablo 3, and Warcraft 3 titles. And yeah, and it's been a hell of a ride since my join to CCP, I suppose. You know, it was, again, the World Tour years, so I've been thrown into the midst of that, just traveling around the world with no break.
Yeah, it's a heck of a time to join. But you are now the senior community dev. What does your role encompass, and how do you fit within the wider community team?
Right, so I think that community teams in general, they're very uniquely positioned. Like, we really intervene with all the different departments within CCP. We work closely with the development, with publishing, with the customer support. We work with like brand and marketing on a variety of different projects. What we do as well is to take care of publishing all of the news and dev blogs and forum posts or patch notes, either on the website or on Steam. So all the editorials and the publishing coordination, this is something for us. Obviously, anything that comes down to community, be it engagement, communication, player gathering, contests, you know, relationship building with different community members, that's something in our alley of work. I personally focus quite a lot on coordination and project management as well, since we're dealing with a lot of different things and CCP has an abundance of crazy ideas that we would like to do. We need to make sure that whatever we're getting ourselves into, we can actually execute and make sure it works. The other side of all of that is obviously making sure that we act as conduits between the players and the Eve development, either by facilitating the exchange or feedback, or making sure that we deliver distilled and digested community feedback to the development team, so they know what the community is talking about, what are their biggest pain points, how are they feeling about the different changes and all that.
It sounds like a lot of ground, especially that last point, a lot of overlap with the CSM. So where do they fit into your, you know, how do you figure out what the community is talking about, what their thoughts and feelings are going to be?
Yeah, so with the CSM, it's actually a very interesting aspect. The dynamic there is that we have the ability to speak with them a little bit more openly and a little bit more in advance than we can with the player base as a whole. Since they signed the NDA, that gives us the option to share with them some information and make them privy to some of the changes or upcoming ideas that we have. I think their involvement differs dependingly on either the feature, product, or the team that we're working with on the development side, because we bring CSM into the conversation at different stages. Sometimes it might be a little bit earlier on when we're trying to only scope the size of the changes or are bouncing around the idea. Sometimes the topics we're going to be bringing to the CSM, they are more fleshed out decision that has been made, and we're simply trying to see if there are any low-hanging fruits or anything that we could have potentially missed. So we would like to change to make it better of the quality than we would have otherwise. I think EVE Online is such a gargantuan of the game that it's almost impossible for everybody to know all the different intricacies that are happening there. So making sure that we can have this valuable feedback from very experienced players available at our fingertips, it's extremely helpful with our work and the work of the CCP in general.
If I may add there, I just want to say how sincerely I appreciate the knowledge that the CSM has and the enthusiasm for the game. I ping them relentlessly when I need advice or ideas or whatever, and it's absolutely fantastic to work with them.
Awesome. That's good to hear. Final thing for Dopamine. You mentioned Guard. Obviously, the community team has lost quite a few of its longtime influential members, your Falcons, your Guards. Could you comment at all about the direction the community team has gone since the changing of the Guard? What new conventions or structures have you guys put into place? How are you viewing things differently now that different people have filled those roles?
Very interesting question. I wouldn't say that we had a very big shift in the way we looked at community management. I think the way CCP has been doing community management and the very strong bond they have been creating, it's something that we want to preserve. I obviously, whenever you have a change within the team or the change of the talents, things are going to be working differently. And obviously either the cooperation as well, the interaction with the player base is going to shift. It's funny because at the moment, I'm pretty much the most senior member at the team. But luckily, we do have CCP Convict and CCP Aurora who are very much respected and knowledgeable, not only within the community, but also within the game, and are making sure that we always keep what's best for our players in mind. From the most noticeable changes, I think we're learning how to be better with our processes and workflows. I think making sure that we preserve all the knowledge that we have within CCP of the essence of what the community management at CCP is and what it does is very important. And I've been putting a lot of effort in the last even year, making sure that we dedicate time to enhance and increase the quality of the work that we want to be putting out.
Looking at the community team, you mentioned Convict and Aurora. I know Convict was one of them, I think Aurora as well, where you guys were recruiting explicitly EVE players who, it'd be great if they had experience in community management and were professionals in that area, but I forget who said the line that it's easier to teach community management than it is to teach what is EVE Online. It seems like that has been a rousing success from my perspective. I'm a bit curious about behind the scenes, how did that idea come up? Did it meet its intended goals? Like, how are we feeling on that one?
Right. So actually, during our recruitment process, we were looking for the best candidates we can get. And it was either within the community or also within the community management in the industry. So we've been interviewing and having discussions with a number of different talents. And it just turns out that, we have the best talents within our EVE Online community already. So I think for me, this is working very well. And this is absolutely something we want to continue doing. But we need to be making sure that, we get the best people that are out there, regardless of where they're coming from or what they did in the past. Because, a lot of different skills and talents you can translate from different occupations. And I think, everybody here knows it well. EVE Online teaches you so many different skills you can use in real life that you don't have to be going far to find the best people within the EVE Online community.
I think also, if I may just add from inside looking out, what you also have is a team which was a bit addressed before with a really diverse range of skills, which is so fantastic to see with Dopamine's love, and I say that with utmost respect, love for processes and structure and workflows and everything, and then with the even knowledge and enthusiasm to jump on things from Aurora and Convict. It's absolutely great.
I mean, what can I say? I just like when shit works, you know?
Yeah, major shout outs to those guys. And their contributions have not gone unnoticed.
That's good to hear also.
And don't mean we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you what you do with your time in EVE. Do you play the game? And if so, what areas do you like to dabble in?
Yeah, I do hop into my ship every now and then. I'm more of a solo player myself on the PvE side. For any games that I play, I'm more interested in trying to figure out how to beat different encounters or just, you know, playing at my own leisure, exploring the space or the game itself. I think for EVE Online, what has been taking the most of my time recently was just all the different Proving Ground events and as well the Abyssal Dead Space. It's something that really, you know, hits my jives really. And I love that I can just jump in, pick a different ship, and hop in into the dead space there.
Definitely been a fun innovation, a little pick up and go, which I know we're going to be talking about in a little bit. But before we move on to other topics, I did have one question I wanted to follow up with something. I think Goodfellow was talking about the ineffectiveness of just having a popular but effectively random streamer pick up EVE and try to get their community into it. The accessibility of EVE for new players beyond just like the actual tutorial part, but in terms of explaining it to people. I would love to hear both of your impressions, especially Goodfellow as the brand director. What works and what doesn't work when you're trying to bring in a new person to EVE and convince them this is something they're supposed to spend their time on?
So that's a great question. So first of all, like you said, we've done trial and error with streamers and like I said before, there's too much learning curve for streamers to explain to their player base in what to play and why they should play EVE. But for example, don't know if you know the guy, but Quill18 did like 8 or 10 different Let's Play videos on EVE Online about a year ago, circa. And we saw when he did them on YouTube. And when you do Let's Plays, like I'm sure you guys know, you can more easily cut the video, edit it, and set it up so it's more consumable for the way EVE is. And we saw a significant amount of people coming in because they saw that video and then being more well-equipped to take on EVE, which was really fun to see. So it's these Let's Play videos that are at least on our list of opportunities to focus more on to get people to play the game. But in terms of getting people to join the game, it's actually like EVE, even though it's a 17-year-old game, it's still incredibly sexy. We have a pretty easy time actually getting people to sign up for the game and try it out, and we can just scale that with different amount of marketing efforts and everything. What we do the most right now is we do video placements on YouTube and the banners on Google Display, which we like. You'll see EVE Online ads when you visit different websites. The EVE Online gameplay trailer, if you guys have not seen it, I recommend it. That is the best performing ad for EVE in the history of the game, basically. And it goes against basically every like normal quote unquote rule for video ads. It's a majestic, slow, 6-minute video, but it performs really well in getting people to join the game.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, and I could go on forever talking about the different things we are trying and everything, but it's basically we are always trying different things out, learning from it, continuing to iterate. And then there's of course things like the recruitment program, which bring in a significant amount of new people also. Of course, there is people creating ASL accounts via the program. And just to clarify that, when we talk about people signing up, we're talking about human beings. We're not talking about people creating ASL accounts and everything like that. There's a very important distinction there to make.
Distinction not always made in EVE's history. Certainly back when I was in the CSM, they didn't really have a good way to pick the two apart. Sounds like that's changed.
So from 2014, there was a lot of effort put into it. And now all the things we monitor are based on customer IDs.
Beautiful. I think that's super important from a business analytics perspective. Just the profile of an older player making a new account and what they're going to do and what they need is very, very different from a new player that doesn't understand EVE.
Exactly. But like I said, it's relatively easy for us to get people to sign up for the game. What we're just trying to work more on internally, and not just the dev team or whatever, the whole of EVE team, is to help onboard these players trying out EVE for the first time, second time, and third time. That is a effort that we've been talking about since the beginning of the World Tour, and that's something every EVE player will hear more of for the foreseeable future, because while our effort so far has been just fantastic, there's still a lot left to do. And we're not in this for the short run, we're in it for the long run.
Well, one thing that we've been following on the podcast more than a little bit because of Lave's personal involvement in combating the virus has been the impact of COVID on various people and on EVE and just the world in general. How has COVID impacted CCP, your work, the EVE community, and from your perspectives?
Do you want to start, Dopamin?
Yeah, definitely. I can take it. From my perspective, I think CCP adjusted to the global pandemic very well. Luckily, the situation in Iceland, it hasn't been as dramatic as in other places around the world. So I think in that sense, we were actually quite lucky. We obviously work most of the time from home, and we have been working from home for the past few months, at least with some people working from home since even March of this year. This obviously introduces its own challenges in terms of communication, as it's not as easy as you are in the office with somebody just to, you know, stand up and walk to them for a conversation. You know, you kind of need to use available either Slack or voice chat or whatnot. But I don't think I don't feel like we have slowed down in any way. You know, all of the goals we've set for ourselves to achieve this year, we hit them. So I think in that regard has been great. And also CCP has provided an amazing support for all of their employees in terms of any hardware needs or any personal needs that needs to be addressed, as obviously each and single one of us is going through this trying times differently, and people need to find their way and readjust themselves. So in that regard, I think CCP response has been stellar.
And if I can add just I mean, obviously, we're extremely fortunate in Iceland to be in a desolated rock in the middle of the North Atlantic Ocean. So we have it. We're extremely lucky compared with so many different countries. And also, I mean, we cancelled FanFest. And when we cancelled FanFest, it was a bit of a shock to many people. But we have an office in Shanghai. Obviously, Pearl Abyss are the owners of CCP. So we did have a clear insight into how this was developing in countries that got hit earlier. So CCP has always managed to be a bit of a one step ahead of the COVID virus in Iceland.
Oh my God, can you imagine FanFest with this thing? Have infected exactly. The entire island.
Exactly. And looking back, it seems like such an obvious decision. But I remember when we were making that decision and the announcement, it felt like, how are people gonna receive it? What would people say? It's funny looking back at all the thinking and everything that went behind a decision that seems so obvious right now. And if you guys remember, people were still planning to visit Iceland right up until like 2 or 1 week before FanFest, just because it hadn't developed in the way it has developed. So it's hindsight is 2020.
Yeah, I think when it first started out, no one really knew how big it was going to be, or very few people anyway. And,
yeah,
there's a lot of conflicting information on it and allusions made to viruses in past years that were not nearly as devastating, like SARS and swine flu and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and that has, like this, like we in Iceland, we have decisions on COVID and how the whole of Iceland response to it has been led by three professionals, two doctors and one from the police. And they have done recommendations to the government, and the government has almost one for one or always listened to their advice and followed it. So there's a total buy-in within the Icelandic community for how things should be run. Obviously, like there's a lot of people frustrated and everything, but who isn't at this point in time?
Yeah, true.
I think it is very much a monumental success of how CCP has transitioned to working from home in this environment and still managed to deliver amazing content following this quadrant model, which has been amazingly successful. And just like looking through the list as we were writing the show notes for today, all of the dev blogs that we have for these like completely game-changing impacts, completely game-changing developments that have occurred in this game this year, it is phenomenal. And looking at all those different changes, we've got like Punch Fan, the resource distribution, ESS, the Abyss Championship, everything like that. Which were you, as the brand manager, community development manager, etc., which was your favorite? Which were you looking the most forward to see how the community would react?
Do you want to start, Dobamin, or do you want me to start?
Yeah, I mean, I feel that for me, since I'm in a community position, I'm kind of excited about every single one of them. And it's part of my job to be kind of monitoring and making sure that we track everything and distill it and send it back to the team. I would say that I think the most interesting to read and review and monitor are all the different economy changes that we're rolling out this year. Those are not the easiest changes that we're doing. Some of them are you know, kind of impacting specific people more than the others, but obviously they are being done with you know, the betterment of If Online in mind and setting us up for the future. But it's always interesting to see how not the best news in the world are being received by the player base.
Yeah, so first of all, thank you very much for your kind words. It does mean a lot to hear it. It's been a crazy year. And I agree, looking back, there's been a lot of things that have been released. And this journey started like September, October last year. So it's been with the updates, Warp Drive active, Howling Interceptors. That's like when we were starting to learn how to do this and trying it out. Went full force this year. For me, what I'm most excited about generally, I know it sounds maybe stupid or crazy or something, but it is these controversial things that are going out. We are very aware before things are released if they will be controversial or not, both just because we think about the game a lot and we also work closely with the CSM. They're a fantastic temperature check in how things will be perceived. So these economy changes are sometimes controversial, and I think getting insight from both polls of opinions is great. And I'm an economist, like I said before, so that's like my hobby part of my job is to follow all of that. More of the fun stuff are the quadrant announcements when we drop the trailer and the key art and do the full takeover and everything. And then to point to a single thing this year, it was probably the Frigate Escape, because I knew people would be so mind blown by it, and it was fantastic to see all the discussion and hype around that.
Yeah, much love for the Bay. question for Dopamine. At least I think it should be for Dopamine. With the resource changes, obviously they're extremely controversial. It's kind of fascinating to see the impact playing out on the EVE server, but I'm also aware of at least one case where the impact is perhaps a bit more severe than initially intended. The CCP Aurora has been active on a thread about ice mining and potential bugs or at least unintended implementation of how ice spawns were impacted by this change. And I don't know that you might not be able to comment on that specific issue, although if you can, please do. But in general, what pace of feedback and iteration should players be looking to on these economic changes? Are there minor tweaks that may happen, or is this the state of play for a while, and then a big shift will happen in a future quadrant?
Right. So in regards to the reported issues with the ice mining, we've been discussing this with CCP Aurora. I know she's been following up internally. I don't know from the top of my head what was the outcome of the conversation, but we do have quite frequent chats with the ecosystem team, both on the community side and also when meeting CSM, when we bring all of those discussions over. I know that the team is very receptive and hungry to hear what the players have to say, but obviously due to the nature of the changes, they need to be careful to not make any knee-jerk reactions there. So when it comes down to a frequency of the changes or updates, I think if something would be extremely negatively impacting some players, we can definitely try to get the team to see if there are any potential solutions that we can deploy right to Tranquility. Obviously, that depends on how many people would be affected and all. But I think, you know, in everything, we need to see the data and metrics and actually the impact of the changes that we're doing. So if we would be making too quick iterations on everything, then the data that we're going to get will not really be, reliable in that sense. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's only a temporary phase. So as much as, you know, maybe life of some people is not as good as it was before, it shouldn't be the case forever. And we just need to, you know, kind of push through and make sure that we discuss and we send the feedback there.
If I may add just what I would say, I'm not going to go into specifics on this question, but if you look at just the track record from the dev team this year, we are changing the way we do releases to EVE. We've put the dial up to like 200-300, and then we are more iterating things that go live and updating it. There's numerous examples I can take from this year. So I think in the long run, that's a much more sustainable and powerful way to release. The dev team has done a phenomenal job in upping the speed, and also you have a really strong community team that is taking all the feedback in from different parts of the game and feeding it into the company.
All right, let's move on. Time to content's been kind of a big focus. And we sort of touched on this a little bit with the Abyssals and how great they are for just hopping into it and getting into some action there. In general, do you think content in EVE has become more accessible than in the past? And in what direction would you see more work on this going?
Yeah. So with the quadrants, what we are really have discussed and what the team has done is to add different things that we can add more pockets that we can use over time. So each quadrant has become added some new flavors that turn them into evergreen things. The filaments, the heat fleets, the abyssal proving grounds. Now soon there's will be an update to the daily challenges, which maybe for veterans is not the most exciting thing you will hear, maybe to some. But what I can tell you is that EVE is a significantly better game for new people or casual players when there is a reason, giving them a reason to do different things in EVE. So both in terms of ease of access and like more diverse content to do is definitely a topic for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can even see it with the addition of Tier 0 to the Abyssal Dead Space, which was exactly designed to allow newer players to just try it out and get in to the Abyssal Dead Space feature very early on. And, you know, this type of making things accessible for newer players is, I think, we can definitely expect seeing more in the future as well.
We got sort of a sidecar question to this. EVE is so feature rich. You know, are there discussions internally of older features that just were introduced and didn't have the desired impact, or perhaps aren't as used as it's worth the upkeep for? And, you know, we often talk about adding new features to the game or reiterating on older features, but at what point do you cut a feature?
I guess a great question to ask. I think in the history of the game, this maybe has not been this opportunity to remove things if they are not working. But right now, what we are really focusing on, and you'll see, I think our this year speaks for that, is not to add different things, but rather deepen things. The Abyssal Proving Grounds maybe feel like a new thing, but they are basically a total revamp of the previous concept, and just basically the top 10 list of requests was just addressed basically and updated. And there's numerous, and the citadels, there's just being updates to them, etc., etc. So we definitely don't want to necessarily add more different features or systems to the game, but rather make the others, the previous ones, more complex or deep or varied.
That's definitely awesome to hear. I know a lot of players in the past have voiced their concerns about CCP and or iterative design versus introducing the next Jesus feature. And it's great to hear that we're on a development cycle to iterate as opposed to focus on these new Jesus features.
Yeah. And I mean, for example, what CCP Rise and Paradox and more on that theme, don't know all of their dev names. I just know their personal names. All these balance updates that have been going on are awesome and probably worth like an episode of its own to talk about how the meta has completely changed this year in large-scale warfare, at least.
Yeah, I wanted to talk explicitly about just how much content has been coming out as far as development changes, the way things are changing within the game itself, the economy, etc. But then simultaneously, we've got a massive, large-scale war that just set a couple of world records as far as the size of the battles that are taking place. How has, or in what way, has this impacted sort of the development or the marketing of our recent changes?
So we definitely had to be, conscious of the events happening within the game in regards to either balance changes or features that we wanted to deploy. Obviously, as much as we can, we don't want to interfere or create any sort of ability for one of the sites to come on the get an upper hand after a CCP patch or changes. And obviously on the same note, we cannot also wait forever and just halt our development completely. So, with any changes that we felt could possibly in some way kind of impact the state of the war. We've been always discussing this with the CSM just to double check both sides of the conflict to see what's the temperature check, how people are feeling about this, and then trying to find the best timing we possibly can to introduce those and give people enough notice so they can react at the same time.
Yeah, and so this war is obviously awesome, and I'm not involved in the politics or the day-to-day of it or anything, so this is really where I get to be like a fan, a giggling fan, to see what happens next or and what's going on, and get to watch the streams, to hear the propaganda from both sides, and it's really, really fun. For the game itself, what you see is obviously people coming back because the two sides are trying to strengthen their numbers. Then you see a lot of press around this, like you mentioned. I mean, breaking the world record is just awesome. There's not necessarily a lot of significant amount of new people signing up for the game because of this, nothing like crazy, but that's not a bad thing or anything. It's just what you just see is a lot of awareness and brand awareness about EVE Online, a lot of people talking about it and everything, and that's just equally as important.
I've also been really, really enjoying the scope in the Pulse videos as of late, and especially the way that we've been integrating player news with game development news in Pulse, or with like in lore, that sort of perspective news from the scope. Has it been a challenge to sort of balance, you know, you only have a certain amount of time, a certain amount of budget to talk about all of the stuff that's happening, and you've got to cover both player news and this game news?
Yeah, it's a luxury problem. It's probably the best way to describe it, what goes out and when. On COVID, obviously, Pulse especially has been a challenge because of just lockdowns and less people at the office or the office being closed, just depending on how the situation is developing in Iceland. But the team behind that has done a phenomenal job. And there, for example, for the scope, it's just, it's so fun for me to watch it because, again, there I get to be more of a fan.
It's fun being a fan and also working on it. It can be a problem sometimes when you work on something and it loses its luster, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. It's a different thing. Equally good, just totally different.
So looking at the big war, especially when we get to these record-breaking fights, time dilation is a thing that we have to discuss. It's something that's been on the player's mind a lot recently. And I know we've seen a lot of changes coming from CCP. I forget the most recent feature that there was a dev blog saying, hey, we're temporarily removing this. I think it was the bounties.
Yeah, kill rights and bounties.
Yeah, just to see how is it going to impact the game performance and the server performance. We also saw the great change with the completely removed the UI. So we're 100% spreadsheets in space now, which is amazing. Looking at this war, you know, how are the technical challenges like server performance and tie-dye bugs impacting the EVE Online brand? Do you guys see an impact there as far as the perception from players?
Do you want to take this on top of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think from the brand perspective, I don't feel like the realities of fighting in heavy tie-dye actually translate to together with different posts or, you know, awareness that players who don't normally engage with EVE Online, they're actually gate. So I don't really feel there is much of negative impact there in terms of the server performance. I think the biggest challenge is just try to anticipate what are you guys going to throw at us next time? Because every single time we update our hardware, we try to, you know, do changes to our database. You completely, you know, push our hardware to the limits. And there simply is not anything available on the market that could, I think, withhold the true potential of what EVE Online players can bring on the grid. But that said, I think our team has been doing a fantastic job. And even though the tie-dye is still there and tie-dye is probably not going anywhere anytime soon, you know, we did have the record-breaking fight, and the server survived. I think there were a couple of moments when we were monitoring our internal metrics when we missed a heartbeat and everybody was just like sweating in that very moment, but we pushed through it. So, you know, huge congratulations to you guys for getting together and executing on a fight, and then sigh of relief for our hardware of actually not burning in flames.
Well, the hardware has done quite well, but you know, one thing that's become apparent is the promise of tie-dye that everything will work as it's supposed to, just really, 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 really slowly, starts to break down at some point. We've had a couple issues with whether it's bubbles or most recently in high profile, a Imperium attempted trap using Titan Doomsdays where all the ticks of damage didn't go through. It's not that they didn't go through right away and they eventually did as tie-dye is supposed to work. It just didn't happen. What can we do on that front?
I think that's a great question. And that Reddit post about that, that the thought process behind it and everything, it was just really insightful and motivating to read about. So there, for us, it's extremely, extremely difficult to simulate these different things. So it's very much a catch-up thing, a permanent catch-up thing, because it's so difficult to anticipate what will happen, what will be on grid, what kind of things will go down, depending on at what point in time they went down and everything. So we are not the best Dopamine Riot to address it, but what I can just say is I know that there is a lot of enthusiasm and passion internally at CCP for these large-scale fleet fights. People stay up working longer hours, not because they need to, but because they want to monitor these large-scale fights. There's a lot of discussions going on internally about the things that are happening and whatever. What is really fun to see for me, the last time we broke the world record was 2.5 years ago in January 2018, if I remember correctly. The sentiment around that world record versus the one now is completely different. I think in some ways it's just a lot of congratulations to the community for embracing the way these complexities are. Like Dopamine says, we are basically in a chronic or eternal arms race with the community, which is just something both everybody needs to embrace, but also there have been fundamental improvements done since January 2018. And one, for example, one good example is the chat improvements that have been done since then. And then I can say, like you mentioned, Artemis, I believe, before on the recent things we've been doing to try to improve experience during fleet fights, that there is more coming. Not some major things, but on Tuesday there is something relatively cool coming, I would say, just to continue this journey we're on of improving.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head there, Gofella. Obviously, we always try to do the best we can to prepare ourselves for all those different fights, but obviously there is literally no way or no simulation available that would allow us to test those specific edge cases or scenarios or strategies that players might be trying to execute on the grid. So I would very much assume that, you know, some very obscure bugs are bound to happen. It's simply inevitable, and it's just a matter of making sure that we can identify them swiftly and then permanently fix so they don't repeat themselves in the next engagement.
That was going to be my next question. Nicely done. this is definitely a good fella question. We've seen a lot more pulse and scope videos and emphasis on DLC packs. Is this an intentional change in EVE marketing strategy? And more importantly, from my perspective, do you find these scope videos, like what is the goal of them? And how are you measuring it? And are they doing what you expect them to do?
That's a great question. So for the pulse and the scope, that's definitely an intention. We are doubling down on just communicating more with our players in different formats. And whilst the scope is like the AAA ultimate thing that we release when it comes to the in-game happenings, reporting on both what the players are doing and what's happening also in-game. Its prime audience is to tell current and past players about the game, to try to keep their interest when still playing EVE or get them to come back. But it's also to create interest for potential new players coming in. And you see that, for example, with the... It was... I don't remember the exact date. It was when the Hard Knocks wormhole thing happened. There was a scope around that. Lee Yancey of Kotaku wrote an article, and that article basically went viral. So we saw a big spike of people coming in there. But that, would, I would say, is more of a great, fantastic bonus in terms of getting new players to come in. Regarding the pulse, that's just also to give people a constant stream of information about things that are going on in EVE. Again, the intention is the current and lapsed player base of EVE. And there we can be, it's more, that's more of a pure marketing video. But we're trying also to have fun with it and create more flavor around it, not just generic blah. And I think the team there has done a phenomenal job, and CCP Miraz, who is the host of the show, is a absolute star. I love working with him.
I really appreciate the scope videos. I mean, they're not quite EVE trailers, but they might as well be. You know, they're fun news broadcast style things I can share to my friends.
Yeah, and exactly. The scope is I cannot speak highly enough about it, and they also seen the metrics. It's not really advertised in terms of paid marketing, the scope, but it's still always hitting a lot of views. So there's a clear, good appetite for it in the community. That one is more of a, like I said, a AAA production, so we're not in a exact cadence of that, because that is just goes live when it's ready to go live, reporting on different things that are happening. Whilst the pulse is more of a regular cadence thing. But yeah, I cannot talk enough about how fun the scope is and entertaining.
So I had a question that kind of changes the pace a little bit, but I think would be good to get your opinions, both your opinions on. So obviously one of the other big things that's happened is the release of EVE Echoes. And it's a different entity, but obviously the brands between EVE and EVE Echoes are very linked. So I was kind of curious, like, how do the two impact each other, and kind of what do you see happening, or how do you see EVE's brand being affected by EVE Echoes and the community as a whole?
So whenever something EVE related launches, EVE Online greatly benefits from it. We saw it during Dust. We saw it now clearly for EVE Echoes. There was a massive influx of players coming in because of EVE Echoes. It is just we are living in probably like the top three or top four at least days of, in terms of numbers in the EVE universe, if you add up both EVE Online and EVE Echoes. So EVE Online benefits from a game like EVE Echoes. What has been fantastic for me is to see how the EVE community has embraced EVE Echoes. That's not a given thing, and I think it shows the intellect and the appreciation of the community, which is great. Then I can add also, I had one point to make. Yes, so it's also the release of EVE Echoes has sparked like another wave of great interest in EVE Online. People try out EVE Echoes and then get like nostalgic or whatever about EVE Online and double down in playing EVE Online. And also for me, for example, after having spent a lot of time playing the first steps of EVE Online to a point where I am like almost blind of it because so much has become automation, it's fun to be a new player again in a fresh new game.
One thing there that's kind of interesting to me too is that Eve Echoes is specifically not a copy of Eve. There's a lot of the same ships, but for example, like module layouts aren't the same, and the play styles are just a little bit different. And so I'm curious if that was kind of intentional, because I know, well, obviously it was intentional, but I'm curious if you think that has to do with how well it's received. Is it's kind of not exactly Eve, but there's enough overlap there to get people interested in both, or if that's just kind of a happy accident as a byproduct.
Do you want to take this on, Topamin?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely spot on there. Obviously, I think if you would simply take Eve Online and slap it on mobile phone, it wouldn't work so well. You know, some of the systems are a little bit too complicated or requiring a lot more attention than playing on the go in a more mobile an environment you can actually do. So those changes have been necessary to adopt Eve Online into the platform that you're simply putting it out there the same way you would do with any game that it's being ported from PC to place to console, for example, right? And I think this is definitely one of the elements that really draws so much success to the positive reception of Eve Echoes, not only for players who are finding themselves rekindle that flame of Eve Online, but also absolutely new people who not have any interactions with Eve Online before and just falling in love with the IP and the universe there.
Yeah, and on that note, what has also been hilarious is like it was 2 months ago or something when Eve Echoes was struggling with server stability, and they had like a downtime for like 2 days or something. And the Eve Echoes community was going crazy just because they wanted to play Eve Echoes. And then you saw the Eve Online community be like, ah, guys, come on, back in our days when Eve was new, like we had much longer things. You guys ain't seen nothing yet. You guys are rookies compared with what we had to deal with.
It is pretty great comparing like the start of Eve Online to the start of Eve Echoes. And that's even been very much a draw to a lot of Eve players. We've heard it in our discussions with other players that one of the things they really enjoy about Eve Echoes is it's like Eve Online in its infancy. As an example, like right now, nobody's flying battleships in Echoes just because nobody has the skill points to fly battleships yet. And so that's just a really great experience to have, and to read stories like Empires of Eve has come out with their second book recently. And so I reread through the first one, just hearing that when the first capitals came out, when the first super caps came out, and I get to experience a little tiny bit of that with Echoes. It's so fun.
That's awesome. And I think with what you are talking about, it's rejuvenating for a lot of Eve Online players. People come back and then miss Eve Online and start playing Eve Online instead of Echoes, or play both games. So it's a celebratory moment for CCP and for Eve players, because Eve does benefit from it.
I'm definitely looking forward to, in the coming weeks, we've got the Eve Alliance Open. In fact, it's like literally this upcoming weekend. Let me get the exact dates here. It's going to be the 14th and the 15th and the 21st and the 22nd. So we're going to have like an amazing Eve stream looking at all of these fantastic tournament play pilots. Very much a passion project of the community, which I'm glad to see CCP has gone through and given a lot of support to their team. But I'm looking forward to playing Eve Echoes while I've got the stream up on my screens and just enjoying that experience. It's going to be so much fun.
That's awesome.
There you go. That's a perfect setup.
So looking towards like the Alliance Open, this is definitely a departure from years past. It skipped a year, and then previously it was housed internally at CCP. There was a lot of player support, but sort of the script has flipped. So now it's housed externally, so to speak, and then we've got a lot of CCP support coming in. How's that from your perspective, looking at the marketing of it, looking at how it appeals to the Eve brand? Just what are our feelings on the Alliance Open coming up?
Well, I'm personally very much looking forward to it. I didn't mention it before, but I'm a really big fan of esports and a tournament and competitive scene for different games. When I joined CCP, I actually have been taking care of the Invasion Tournament series. So seeing the Alliance Open coming up this year has been a real pleasure to be able to support the guys and the event team and the core team behind it. Hopefully, you know, seeing the lineup and the teams there, we're going to be able to witness some really quality and encounters and engagements that will, go down in the pages of the history for competitive scene for EVE Online.
Now, we can't be talking about tournaments. We're talking about the decision of why it is now housed externally and whether that'll be continuing the removal of the Alliance tournament from the EVE social ecosystem was a very painful excision. And having the two of you here would be remiss in my duties if I didn't bring it up and ask you how CCP is feeling about that decision currently and if there are any chances we might see the official Alliance tournament back at some point soon.
Do you want to start, Tobominor?
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I'm going to level with you guys here. I think we all would like to see Alliance tournament happening, but Alliance tournament is it's a huge project where it needs to be done properly. I wouldn't say that any of the decision has been made in regards of either discontinuing or starting Alliance tournament again. But there is a lot of people, not only within CCP, but also within the community that are extremely passionate about it. So I definitely feel like in the future, we only are going to be seeing more of the EVE Online tournaments in some shape or form.
Yeah, and the opportunity cost for Alliance, just to be brutal, the opportunity cost for Alliance tournament is extremely high. And it's fantastic to see the community, the appetite the community has for esports. Like Dopamine, I share definitely the enthusiasm for esports, especially in EVE. We are taking steps in this direction, and that has been said before, with the Abyssal Proving Grounds. And while I completely know that they do not address it one for one, we will simply have to wait to see how that develops out without making any promises for the future. This year, we have gone completely back on making any big announcements or promises until it's just ready to be talked about, and we're going to stick to that. So we acknowledge the community and their want for this, and we totally understand it as well. But it's just not ready to be talked about at this moment in time. And I know it's not the answer you guys want to hear, but that's just the way it is.
Fair enough. Note to our audience, we know that there have been some pretty major updates announced, and we've touched on a few of them here, but not in any detail. So we're going to dive into the new bounty system, NPC bounty system, and the new ESS system, and the way those two things interact in much more detail in the next show. I want to move it right now into host highlights and then go to shoutouts. My highlight has been catching an Ikatirsa in my interceptor. I was just in a really great fleet with Wrecking Crew, one of those things where you're just kind of doing something else and a ping pops up. I had been getting ready to do a recruitment roam for our newest recruit, Nicholas, and we've been waiting for him to move his ship down, and in the process of that, a ping went out that this fleet had been moving around, and they were right in the pipe where I was trying to bring this guy in. So I hopped in on that fleet, and we tried to catch these guys. It was a sizable fleet, and they were pretty well balanced. They had some heavy DPS, they had a lot of anti-tackle, they even had a little bit of logi. So it was extremely difficult to try to pin them down and get that direct conflict that the Wrecking Crew fleet was looking for. And we managed to isolate one of the Ikatirsas from the rest of his fleet. And as he was warping around, pulling tackle apart, it was noted on comms that this is probably exactly what he wants as he's warping to various planets and asteroid belts. But I got lucky in a sense. I picked the right belt at the right range and landed just as he was landing, about 30 to 40 kilometers off of him. And as I saw him coming in, I manually pointed my ship in that direction, activated the micro warp. By the time I could lock him, I was under 20, locked him up, orbited 500, and prayed to God that he didn't have a web. He did not, thankfully, and I wasn't able to be tracked by his Triglavian guns at that range, also somewhat thankfully. So the newts came out, but by the time he had whittled down my cap, other interceptors had since glommed onto him. And then it was only a matter of time. So it was a pretty fun thing. Very thrilling to try to tackle something that's designed to kill tackle. But just the right set of circumstances got laid out, and I just super enjoyed it. It was a very thrilling. Didn't quite have the shakes, but it was getting close. So I wanted to share that with everybody.
My host highlight has very much been looking at all of the dev blogs we've had drop about the upcoming changes, be them balance changes or like the ESS, and then immediately getting inspired and hopping into like CC or TQ, depending on the circumstances, pulling up Python on the other screen and theory crafting a couple hours away. It's been an amazingly fun experience.
I think there's two dev blogs coming next week.
Ooh, even more to talk about on the next show. Brilliant. Andy?
It's gonna be great.
Yeah, so my highlight has just been seeing our EU time zone grow. We've had a bunch of new people join Noir in EU, and they've been absolutely killing it. They've been out almost daily killing at least something, a lot of times a lot of things. So that's been super cool to see.
For me, my highlight's going to be Twitch versus E4. It happened last weekend, organized by Streamfleet. Those guys nailed it once again. Seven very experienced fleet commanders doing roaming fleets, including our own CCP Aurora. And I think what I like the most is simply seeing this type of community interactions when everybody just gets together. It really fills you up and motivates you to give back even more to everybody there. So it's always fantastic to witness.
Good fellow.
Yeah, it's definitely all the discussion and debate and both love and hate around the ESS and DPS announcements. It's absolutely fantastic to see all these EVE players talk it out. What's good, what's bad, why is it good, why is it bad, what impact will it have on the game, etc. I look forward to see how it develops when it goes live, because I think nobody can fully anticipate it, because it, at the end of the day, all depends on how EVE players will interact with it. So the result is very much in EVE players' hands, not in anybody else's. But it's just people debating what's best for EVE and not agreeing. And I've come to love that.
Beautiful. Also beautiful, my shout-out, Mark Havoc, our first but certainly not last member of the highest Patreon tier of support we offer, the Golden Elite. It's a little follow-up to the fact that we launched a Patreon recently, and we have had one or two takers, but Mark, our first Golden Elite member, thank you so much, and you will now hear him word that he continues to support the show at that level. If you'd like to hear your name in here every episode, by all means, head to our Patreon. The link is on declarationsofwar.com. And you can also search us directly in Patreon, Declarations of War.
My shout out goes to the EVE community for just like really stepping up in a big way to support a charity just out of nowhere. So I've linked it in our show notes. You guys can go and check it out a bit later. But essentially what occurred is an EVE player had a friend who was doing a charity stream. I believe when I tuned in, she was streaming Overwatch at the time, but it was a 24-hour stream streaming for, let me get the exact charity here, the Children's Miracle Hospital Network. I think I got that backwards. But in any case, it was just going on there in hour 16, and Asher Elias caught wind of it, and so he pinged it out to Goonswarm, and then of course like all the spies got wind of it, and so it got pinged out to Horde, and I think I saw a ping in Wrecking Crew as well for it, and just suddenly this stream, this charity stream, just out of nowhere spiked up to 450 with EVE players throwing in tons of donations. I think we're up over $4,500 of donations to this stream, so it's really great to see the EVE Online community stepping up and supporting a charity stream, even though it wasn't like specifically Eve content. We're there to have fun and do some good in the world.
That's awesome.
Truly wonderful of the Eve community. Andy?
Yeah, so I actually changed my thank out at the last minute, but I feel like since we have two people from CCP here, my shout out goes to, or thank out goes to GM Week. It's one of my favorite kind of community events that happens every year. I absolutely love watching it, so I just appreciate that you guys do that kind of thing and interact with the community in that way.
That's great to hear. We'll definitely pass that on to the GMs that do lift all the heavyweights to make that happen.
Yeah, there's plenty of them.
All right, well, speaking of our wonderful GMs, Dopamine and Goodfellow, who would you like to shout out for this episode?
So my shout out is going to go to Eventi. They're working on the Alliance Open. Everybody's looking forward to it. And they've put a crazy amount of work into it so far. So a big shout out. Thank you very much, guys, for doing the heavy lifting there and pouring all of your passion in this for Alliance Open tournament.
Good fella.
Yeah, I'm going to change mine again. Also, not again. I'm going to change mine also. In the spirit of everything we discussed, hearing you guys talk about this as well, it was innominate, I think, in one of the CSM sessions we had when we were talking about marketing. He said, or recruitment program or something. We're talking about bringing players into the game. And he said, yes, you guys are maybe the ones bringing the players into the game, but we're the ones making them stick. And I think whilst we can definitely put effort into helping new players get better understanding of EVE, none of it matters if it wasn't for the EVE community bringing these people into the corps, taking fleets with them, like you guys are explaining. It's awesome, and just vital to the longevity of EVE.
Wonderfully said. That's it, guys. Head to declarationsofwar.com to participate in our show poll. Noir is recruiting, and we can always use a few more good mercs. Join CafeNoir.in-game for more info, and whoever you're flying with. Good hunting, listeners.